This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. I have two very special guests today, Aaron Brown and Jesse Richardson. Aaron Brown is a program director who oversees many different projects at the Portland Open Bible Food Pantry. And Jesse Richardson is a serial entrepreneur who has successfully raised over $1 million in venture capital for various startups since 2011. And he's also the co-founder of RMB Pantry Services. Hello, welcome. How are you?
Good. Hello. Good to be here.
Amazing. Thank you for having us.
So excited to have you guys. I'm so impressed with everything that you have accomplished, and I can't wait to share with my listeners everything that you've done, especially, you know, talking about companies that really took advantage of the pandemic and did such amazing work. I mean, you guys are definitely the example that every media network should be talking about. But before we begin and talk about all the good things that you guys have done, I would love to start with each one of them. Aaron, I would love to start with you. Okay. And learn what was the inspiration behind you guys founding RMB Pantry Services.
Right. So I'll try to keep it short, but I'll make it good as possible. So where we are in Southeast Portland is just one of the poorest neighborhoods in the Pacific Northwest. When it comes to food insecurity, I think we have about 30% people living in the poverty area. And so what happened was, because my father's a pastor at a church, and we would have constant break-ins, right? And so we had security camera, and it was almost ironic. It almost ended up being the thing we do on Monday, is we check the security cameras to see what people took, right? And you know, after about four or five videos, we noticed that they were only taking food. Like, they were skipping over the major electronics. They're skipping over all this stuff that, you know, you can make good money for. And they were just grabbing bags of rice. So My mother came to church that Sunday, and it was her and just an empty bucket. And she was like, well, you know, when we're in a situation like this, we have two choices. We could just always go to the police and, you know, try to find these people, or we could, you know, look at it as a chance to foster some real change in our community. So my mom just very humbly said, well, this is our first can of food. And if you guys want to donate cans, keep on donating them. Wow. Right. And so that was about maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, it's one of those things where it kind of grew a little bit more. It's one of those things where you kind of pop your head in and, oh man, there's 20 people out there. Oh man, there's 30 people out there now. And then we got to the point when COVID hit, and this is kind of where Jesse comes into the picture, where, you know, imagine this for a second, like imagine, because we have people from all nationalities, like literally all nationalities, like almost every continent. And so when.
Aaron, can you hear us?
I lost him too.
Yeah. It's okay. Let's wait. He'll probably come back. So it's definitely his internet.
I just sent a message and told him that we lost him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there he goes.
All right. Yeah, he'll come back in a minute. It's fine. And we can just pick up where he left off.
Perfect.
It's totally fine. Jesse, I'm so impressed by what you've done, what you've accomplished.
Thank you. Definitely staying busy.
It's not easy. I work with tech startups that get funded millions of dollars and then they come to us for advertising. So I know what it takes to raise the money and then spend the money wisely to, you know, keep up with the runway that they have to prove out the model to their investors. So it's not an easy task. So
yeah, my background isn't even in tech. So I kind of just fell into it. Yeah.
So what exactly did you do though? I mean, were you just hiring?
Yeah, I actually went to school for political science at UCLA. And I got involved with another company, a media startup when I was in college. I got hired on as their editor in chief as a college student, basically. And then during that process, they're like, oh, this is going really well. We're making fantastic content. We raised some money, and then I was going to go into, you know, public works and public service stuff at a college, because political science is what I wanted to do. And we raised money, and then all of a sudden I never left the tech realm. So a lot of publishing and a lot of software stuff since then. And just a big focus on CPG products, and just never kind of went back to that, but always have had like this kind of focus where for all my businesses, we work with lots of nonprofits, working with Aaron on this type of project, still trying to stay in the public realm and using business as like an actual force for good, not just for making money.
Amazing. I love that. I really, really love that. And I love being around companies like yours that are trying to do good things for people, you know, not solely focusing on the money. It's great to have the money. Obviously, the money gives you ability to do a lot more good. But yeah, I do agree. I think we completely lost Aaron.
I think we did too.
Why don't we do this? He kind of did his intro. When he comes back, we'll just pull him in. And then let's just continue in terms of, and I'll just basically start off with saying, Jesse, what was your why behind why you guys co-founded RMB Pantry Services? And then you can do that. And then Aaron can come back and we'll kind of go from there. Let's
do that. You can piece it all together in editing.
Yeah, we'll piece it all together. It's totally
perfect.
All right. Jesse, tell me, what was your why?
Yeah, kind of like Aaron said, I got involved with a pantry a couple years after it had originally started. And it was, you know, mainly for the reasons that he was describing, where when the pandemic was hitting, you know, they were already growing so vastly as a food pantry in Southeast Portland that when the pandemic started to really picking up pace, people were really facing a different level of food insecurity. And the pantry was seeing just an explosive growth of all these different populations. Arabic speakers, you know, Mandarin speakers, Vietnamese speakers, and for this small food pantry to, you know, have a good process for all these different types of people, it was really difficult, not only from a space point of view in terms of fitting everybody into one space to come and get that food, but also from a communication point of view. I mean, it was just difficult to have people on site that could speak to everybody in their native language and, you know, obviously make them feel comfortable and, you know, make them feel welcome into a place that a lot of people see a big stigma around. They don't want to go to a food pantry. And, you know, a big part of it was we wanted to have the vision of it. It feels like a family kind of affair. And so, you know, when Aaron came to me kind of with the challenge of how do we facilitate all these different populations, and how can we make this easier for all of us, not only from the fulfillment perspective, but from just getting people in and out and quickly, it really was a chance for me and him to come up with some ideas on how can we take technology and how can we use it to solve these problems. And what we did there basically was create an ordering system online where it was really easy for people to go just straight to the website, choose the form in their language. Everything's translated. It has all the different options. It's basically like Instacart. You can go on there, choose what you want to have. Aaron and his team then on the fulfillment side would prepare all of that stuff. And then you as a person could just drive up. So having that whole idea and like coming up with the structure for it and then seeing it come alive was really like the passion behind it. It was like, okay, can we solve this? Can we, you know, feed, you know, 10, 20,000 people a month or quarter? And then seeing that we could was the real driver behind, you know, growing the program.
Incredible. Aaron, how did you guys fund this project? I mean, what was...
Well, it started with, donations, obviously, just donations from anybody local that went to our church, you know, and it started out as food donations, which is fine because any money you give us is going towards food anyways. But we started partnering and writing grants with some of the major kind of people in Portland. And, you know, it's one of those things where we started off like, hey, maybe we could get a $1,000 grant to get a new refrigerator because, you know, we're having a higher concentration of people, you know, when there's just not enough refrigerator space. So it started like that. And now it's at the point because we've had such big growth through the pantry and the drive-through where, you know, we're probably netting, how much are you bringing in a year, Jesse, through donations and everything? I think maybe $3 million, $4 million.
It's, I mean, it's grown like crazy.
Yeah. And so we'll do also do things like galas where we'll do silent auctions and stuff like that. You know, we work with anybody you can imagine. There's always, what's great in kind of our world is there's always a new grant coming out. And so we just see if that grant kind of serves our population or not. And then, yeah, we just keep the ball rolling as much as possible. And it ends up being really fulfilling. And one of the great things, because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss this, is because, you know, food is a necessity that we all have, right? Like all three of us are going to have to like eat something by this time tomorrow, you know, it's just something that we have to have, like food and shelter, you know, that surpasses vacations or a car or anything, like you have to eat. And so what's great about providing that service is that a lot of the people who come onto our site, you know, if they're houseless or maybe if they're coming from, you know, maybe just a rough background of any kind, I mean, you know, you do the math, is that they're so, a lot of them are so used to being thrown out of places and like, why are you dressed like this? Is that food gives us an opportunity to kind of restore humanity within communities, right? And so a lot of times, like even, you know, people that couldn't get jobs otherwise, you know, they're just, whether they fell on bad luck or anything like that, you know, they'd be like, hey, we'll start volunteering. And, you know, we've had so many people that have just volunteered for 6 months and just been consistent that are full in time or that are full time employees now. And so I've always had a real heart for, you know what I mean? Kind of the underdog story. And it's funny because Jesse's always been like that too, because me and Jesse used to play music together. And it'd be funny because we would get done with shows and people would always come up to Jesse for jobs when we'd be walking back to the car. And we'd be walking and it'd be somebody, I'm like, you want to give him a job? Are you sure you want to give him a job, Jesse? And Jesse always had the greatest heart because he would be like, no, there's something he could do. Whether it's packing boxes or whatever, there's something he can do. So maybe that's the way that me and Jesse have really gone above and beyond in what we do, is because we have a need and an inkling and just this like core feeling to help people that nobody else is helping. And that's very important to us. And like I said, we were doing this before we got paid for it and now we're doing it after, but it's like the mentality is exactly the same and it's never going to change, you know?
I'm just so impressed. I'm so impressed because I have been interviewing a lot of nonprofits and a lot of them have great ideas and they're doing really well, but it's been so hard for them to raise any type of funding to be able to support what they're doing. And I would love to learn a little bit more about how did you guys manage to get to 3 million? That's pretty impressive in such a short time.
You know, I think, you know, and, you know, for this, we're kind of talking about two things. You know, there's Portland Open Bible Food Pantry, which is the pantry that was started by Aaron's mom and going through the church. R&B Pantry Services is kind of our kind of third party consulting wing, which we formed out of growing that pantry. And now we're providing the same services and technology to pantries all around the world, basically. So with Portland Open Bible Food Pantry, that's the one that's really raising those grants. You know, it's local donors, it's galas, it's FEMA money through COVID. So there's a lot of funding that was provided by the federal government during the last 2 years. And when, you know, when grant writers are looking at the specifics of a program, you know, a lot of people are showing over a couple percent growth year over year. You know, we expanded this to this new population. In the last 2 years, we've expanded it from just mainly an English type of program, English, Spanish, to 7 different languages. You know, we've worked with multiple other organizations like Midway Division Alliance to expand it to their Arabic speaking population. APANO, which is a Asian American nonprofit here in Portland, to really reach out to new other groups. And so when we've been looking at our grant writing and our stuff that we've been sharing with not only FEMA, but also private funders, you know, we're showing double digit or in most cases, triple digit growth month over month of, hey, we served 500 people the first month of, let's, you know, 2020. This month we're serving 6,000 people. You know, it's like an enormous amount of growth. And it's because of really not just reaching the new people, but the system that we're doing it in. A lot of nonprofits, especially in the food pantry world, they're not, and Aaron and I have learned this through our private work, they're not very they're not really quick to adapt, especially with technology. They've got a way that they do it, and that's what they want to do. They want to have clipboards and they want to have paper, and they're going to walk with the person through the food line. They're going to help them get their food, which is a great system, and that system does work. But when you include technology in it, and when you're not afraid to make new bets on new things, which Aaron's mom, Betty, is like, you guys got an idea? Do it. You know, Aaron's like, oh, we want to do this. She's like, do it. You know, when you introduce electronic form processing and you introduce, you know, ways to partner with other organizations to get hundreds of new people in a month, wow. You're writing 30 grants a month, 40 grants a month, you know, people see that and they're like, wow, this is the only organization in, you know, like Aaron said, one of the hardest hit places in the Pacific Northwest. And they're doing things that the biggest food pantries never even dreamt of doing. One of our major partners, for example, Oregon Food Bank, you know, they work with a whole regional network of food banks in the Pacific Northwest, both Oregon and Washington. And, you know, they're constantly like, no other pantry is doing what you guys are doing. No other group is providing these technological services to food pantries like you guys are doing, because they're all just focused on one thing, feeding people today, you know, and that is obviously a lot of work. But mm-hmm. when you're able to, you know, take some passion and some technical expertise, and you're able to go into that system and be like, hey, why don't we do it like this? It completely revolutionizes the operational and the fulfillment requirements of this type of system.
Yeah.
And you're able to scale it, right? You're able to scale it to such a bigger number.
Oh, yeah. At least for on-site stuff, you know, now we could, you know, I think we did 140 cars on Tuesday, you know, and had three people working it. And that my slogan I kind of used to use was, hey, we're going to be quicker than the drive-through. You'll be here shorter than you are at a stoplight. You know, mm-hmm. So we just get some young dudes that are want to work. And that's the other thing. Like, it's what the biggest lessons that we end up learning is that a lot of these kids that are like 19 years old and, you know, mom's kind of like, hey, you either got to get out or you got to go to school or do something. And so guys that kind of grow up in rough neighborhoods, they're looking for those kind of opportunities. And so it might start off as something really simple, but like, with us, and at least with my thinking, I'm always trying to foster big picture change, you know, within just like the community that I had. Like I said, now we're adding mental health therapy sessions that weren't there before because, you know, a couple of our kids, our workers, you know, who are 18 got shot at. And, you know, and now it's like, you know, we're bringing in people to bring in actual therapy sessions, because that was a big issue ever since, you know, just things went, I mean, if the inner city, I think we all know what it's like to kind of live, you know, in the rougher areas. And so like, oh man, like we got him a job. Maybe we can make him like mentally on point. And it's just like, maybe we could like round out this great solid person. And so that's what's so big, is restoring the humanity in people that society has kind of forgotten, and kind of giving them that level of confidence to do whatever they got to do. And now they're leading teams. That's what's so funny. The guys that I'm telling you about, they're 18, 19 years old, you know, and they're leading teams of 15 people, and half of them are doctors, you know. And that's the most amazing thing, because like the boost that they didn't have before, we kind of gave to them. So that's always been my biggest thing, is food is great, all that stuff's great, but if we could foster change in who the person is, that's really big. And so, you know, with the whole kind of SNAP benefit welfare mentality is, you know, because of course I have family who's on welfare, and it's the idea that, okay, I'm kind of on welfare, therefore you owe me stuff. And I remember sitting down with my mom, you know, because I was, one of my family members was like that. And I just remember thinking like, she's so smart. She could like, you know what I mean? She could be so much better at this, and we could just like get her kind of like going. If she's willing to work, I'll give her a job type of thing. And so Jesse also have a really big heart for, you know, we 100% believe in helping out the underdog in every situation, you know, amazing. And it would shock you how much they step up.
Amazing. What's one thing you figured out throughout this journey that you think took you to the next level?
You go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, one thing that I think was really, that really changed the game for us in growing not only POBC, but also R&B Pantry Services, and what we try to do to scale our own business is how powerful information can be. Like one of the main things that we have, you know, pitched a lot of pantries on, and what has helped us get a bunch of grants and also expand the program, is just data. It's that there's so much information around these types of interactions with, you know, users or customers or whatever that we want to call them, people who frequent the pantry, that in most settings, it's impossible to capture that because it is on pen and paper. Using the system that we've built, we've really discovered that like we can now look at a chart that says, here's the foods that are selected most, because it's the multiple choice type of order form. Everybody wants chicken. Everybody wants this pork thing. Everybody wants this type of grain. And so using that information and being able to go to a food supplier or a grocery store network like Safeway or New Seasons or something and say, hey, these are our most requested things. Can you provide us these groceries? Or from a budgetary perspective, hey, we've got, you know, this $10,000 to buy groceries for this week. Let's buy these categories. So, looking at data and leveraging that, I think has been something that is really, we knew it was gonna be powerful in the beginning, but as we scaled and like seeing how that looks, especially over time and getting years of data at this point, really seeing what people have decided has really been a place to be like, hey, if you're a food pantry and you're struggling with your budget and you keep on buying peanut butter and no one wants that, then you need to rethink your strategy there. And this is a good way for us to show like, hey, you're getting real world data. Even if it's food that you don't have on site, you know that's what people want. Next time you place an order, you've now got quantifiable information. You know, it's not just this anecdotal thing that you talked about one person in line with that they wanted. You've got real information that real consumer demand for. So I think that, just from like a business perspective, us learning that data can be so powerful, especially for food pantries, from a budget perspective and from a grant writing perspective and from a partnership perspective with grocery store change, I think it's been huge, at least from where I'm sitting. I don't know, Aaron, if there's anything else you'd want to throw in there.
I think knowing, obviously, best thing is knowing your audience, you know what I mean? And after a while, you know, okay, this population, I'll give you the example, just being real. So like on Tuesdays, we have mostly Cantonese speakers, so they're from a part of Eastern China, and then we also have a lot of Hispanics. Those are like our main two groups, and Vietnamese also. So going into it, when we're doing our Monday pickups, you know, and we're picking up 100 pieces of meat, okay, I know this is what our population is going to look like according to the reports that we actually run. So hey, they all like chicken, so let's bring it all the chicken in. However, Thursdays, Russian, you know what I mean? It's Russian in houses population. Okay, now it's when we're doing our Wednesday pickups, bring this amount of food in for these people. And so we're big on like not wasting any food whatsoever, which really, really helps us because if not, we have to go into our pocket a little bit more than we'd like to. So it's pretty much just what Jesse said, just knowing your backend stuff, knowing your clientele, running reports on them. And what's great about this world, or at least the inner city world and like the immigrant population, which my family comes from, is that our world is a world that, especially when it comes to America, when my family came here from Costa Rica, it's a tight knit world. You know what I mean? And so, you know, in my family, if one Costa Rican hears about it, 30 Costa Ricans are going to hear about it. You know what I mean? And so like everybody, every single person is super important to me for that reason. I know that for a fact, because a part of that population where it's like a pipeline to another 30, 40 people. And that's actually happened where, you know, you'll have five Vietnamese people. We had five Vietnamese people sign up for boxes. And then over 24 hours, I think we had 95 more.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like a whole apartment building learned about it, because they're all very tight knit in Southeast, and they're just are like one of the smallest online subsections that were being ordered from Vietnamese all of a sudden became like our second largest in a week, just because people are like, wow, this is so easy. You order online, you go drive up, they put it in your car and you drive away. Yeah. Super simple. Yeah. You know?
And that's how you stay ahead of the curb on everything, you know?
And let's not mention that some people might be embarrassed to come and fill out a form and be seen, where you guys are really helping them overcome that, you know, as much as they might need the food and they might need the help, maybe they don't want to be seen. And, you know, but driving by, it's like quick, you get in, get the help you need and get out, get the products, food you need.
Yeah, with the order form too, it's almost like you're shopping. Again, it's like Instacart. Yeah. It's the idea is that, hey, you can have the dignity of choice. You know, you're the one making the decision. You're shopping for yourself. It's not like you're just going in and you're grabbing whatever you possibly can. You don't just get like a random box of stuff that every single person gets. And I think that another big population that we saw grow during the pandemic because of the drive-up system that we had instead of just the walk-in, which, you know, required you to go and interact with people, was so many more just like normal white people who were coming to Southeast to come in. Because again, Southeast Lens neighborhood is definitely one of the toughest neighborhoods in Portland. And I feel like there's also just kind of that more cultural shame for just, you know, Americans, people who aren't multi-generation, you know, immigrants, that they really don't want to go to a food pantry. That makes them feel some type of way about it, which is totally understandable. But having the ability to be like, you're ordering online, you're driving up, someone's putting the box in your car, it's got your name on it, it's got your grocery selections on it, really made them feel a lot more comfortable engaging in a food pantry system that didn't make them feel like they were less than because they had to go get that. Right. And, you know, the main focus too of this type of system, which is obviously we serve a big houseless population, but a lot of these people they're not homeless, they're not houseless, but they're right near that line. You know, what we want to do is we want to replace the grocery bill that so they can pay for their power or they can pay for their rent. And so there's all these people who are all, you know, everybody thinks who goes to a food pantry, all dirty homeless people or people who are like, I don't know, less than kind of second class citizens. Yeah. There's a lot of normal people, quote unquote, who use very food pantries. Yeah.
Just to echo what you're saying, you know, a lot of, you know, Maria,
Maria.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of the biggest things is that, you know, you'll just get moms that got to get the food and get back home with their kids. Yeah. That's, you know, that's just the reality of it. It's just, I don't have the time to sit in this line of 100 people. So that population was being reached before, but I would say the most amazing population that we've reached is the disabled community. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. People, that's huge.
People that can drive. Yeah. People that literally can't drive, but you could put groceries in their car. That's been the hugest one. I mean, I could have so many stories. I mean, and stories that will get you kind of like choked up because, like, you know, you'll see that 80-year-old woman, you know, and it's funny because they're from, obviously people are from different areas. And so a lot of times when you see stuff, you could see it from your own culture. And I'll never forget this woman, she had a pole and then on both ends, she had groceries, right? And she was carrying groceries like that, but she had to go about like 5 blocks. And so us being grown men, just being like, hey, you guys stay here. We're gonna help this lady out right now. You know what I mean? And now she's become like a sign-up person. So her husband picks her up and does that. So, you know, if we're talking about the 80-year-old population, you know, we all know how heavy groceries can be. And now they're just putting it straight up in their you know, the back of their truck, into their car, giving us a smile, and then they're in and out of there. And they're so grateful for it, you know? So it's great.
That's incredible. How can our listeners support you guys? Where can they get a hold of you and learn more about RMB Pantry Services?
I'd say probably the best place is just to go to pobcpantry.com. And that is the main pantry that we work with. That's Aaron's mom's pantry. We work with pantries all over the world. This technology is very, very easy to apply to literally any system. We work with people in different states. It's also very, very inexpensive to get started. We've priced the whole program and our services around the budget that a food pantry has because we come from that world. You know, we're not just a tech startup here trying to quote unquote solve a problem. It was because we actually had to solve a problem. And then we just said, hey, how can we share this information? But probably the best way is just to go to POBC Pantry, hit the contact button. It'll come straight to Aaron and I because we're the ones operating that technical side of that site. And, you know, one other thing I'll mention too, for maybe some pantries or other systems that might be listening that are curious, the system also applies for delivery stuff too. So we just recently expanded a delivery program for those elderly or disabled people who can't even get to the pantry. You can use the same exact system that we have. We've partnered with another technology company that basically allows you to create a route, the most efficient driving route. So you can take in like 30 orders, for example. Your team, you know, builds the boxes, you take those 30 addresses and it gives you the perfect way to drive to each one of those to get back to the pantry from where you're at. And so we've got this kind of secondary system built on top now for delivery services. So for people who can't even get there and really, really need the food. And so it's a very adaptive system. If people want to learn more about it, Aaron and I always love talking to different people and sharing ideas. the system that we've built is, again, very, very kind of open source and very inexpensive to get started. And we're definitely, you know, if you run a pantry, definitely reach out to us. If you know a pantry in your neighborhood, definitely reach out to us, because again, the pen and paper system, it works. But if you're trying to get more grants and you want to grow your program, implementing something that, you know, barely costs you anything to get started and be able to show this grant provider, hey, we just doubled our numbers by having this new thing and we cut down the time it takes to feed those people by 80%. I mean, it just is a shoo-in, and that's how we're getting funds for different pantries. Right. It's, you know, we're doubling the amount of people we're feeding, and it's taking us half the time.
Incredible. We'll have all the details in the show notes. And my last question is, if people want to donate, where would they go to donate money?
POBCpantry.com. Go to that same place. It's P as in Paul, O as in Owen, B as in boy, C as in Kathy, pantry.com. And there's a donate button on top. All the donations that go to Portland Open Bible Community Pantry go to directly to feeding people. And every single dollar counts. It really makes a huge difference for us. So please support that pantry. And if you want to work with R&B Pantry Services, just hit the contact button and we will we'll be there for you.
Yeah, awesome. And I also, Maria, I dropped our personal emails in there. So just in case if they want to, feel free to share our emails too, if they're trying to get a hold of us directly. Like I said, we're always around. We're always willing to work with different groups of people. And yeah, you know, hopefully we could take anybody's thing to the next level.
I love it. I love it. Thank you guys. We'll have all the details in the show notes. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. It was really fun.
Yeah, I loved it. Hope to talk to you guys again. Well, at least
you need to come back again. Thank you.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.